Bye, Jim. Nice to see you.
Best show Jim's been on in years.
Yeah, we're finally going to get a contribution out of him on the show. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, it's like a Mussolini look there.
What's up? Everybody healthy?
Yep.
Apparently, I'm the only person that in the U.S. that is healthy. Well, I don't know, Mike. You sound pretty healthy.
Yeah, no problem. Came back from
Seems
Vegas.
Like everybody no else. Wow. I've actually been pretty lucky. I've had a couple of really minor sicknesses in the last year and a half, but I haven't been full blown sick for probably coming up on probably a year and a half, 2 years now.
Yeah, kinda it's nice. Been a while. It's been a while since I've been really sick, but yeah,
I've been sick for about a week. My youngest daughter has been very sick for the last few days.
Oh, that's no good.
Nah, it's been rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sound better today than you did on Friday.
I went skiing. They say mountain air is good for you. It's all nice and healthy. So I went skiing for a week. I came back and I was sick as a dog for a week.
Well, it's the lounge. It's the lounge that's not healthy, Jim. The skiing was fine. It's sitting next to the fireplace with nine other people drinking shots of, you know, whatever is Jägermeister.
Me?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
Barely to bed every night.
Yeah.
So. In bed by 7.
What's going on in the pool world? Enlighten
well,
me.
Well, Mike, something
to bitch about.
I want you and Bob, I want you guys' opinions. Because, well, let's start with Bob because let's go chronologically. If we go back to the whole ref shenanigans, you had something that you wanted to say on that. So why don't you go ahead?
I had some inside info on that regard, the story is that the players were informed duly about the rule. The players who didn't know were or not attending the players meeting or not able to understand, but the refs also were not pleased with the whole thing, meaning that they are there to enforce the rules, obviously. They are not the rule makers. Some of them obviously also said this is going to wreak havoc, but they are ordered to do so.
Are we talking about the rules for the lag?
The rules for the lag.
All of them. I mean, there was a lot of stupid rules.
And the patches and all of that.
And the bathroom breaks.
Yeah. And that they are also not happy that they are now put in a bad spotlight because they are the proverbial messengers. But the rules come from the higher-ups. So that was a little bit of internal feedback that I gathered from here and there. And I understand if my boss tells me you do this and you do this, then I only need to execute, and I'm not there to I can question, I can challenge, but if at the end of the day he says no, you do this, and that's my final decision, then I have to execute. So I understand the referees in question that are a little bit annoyed about the fact that they are now getting all the bad publicity. And they are just the executors.
Okay, but I don't know if you know. I don't know if you can answer this.
Mm-hmm.
Who is then the boss? Who decided that this was a set of rules? Was that the WPA or is that Predator themselves?
The tournament organization. Who the involves
tournament
that
organization tournament? Is a mixture then of both.
Is a mixture then of both? Yes. Who pulled the final trigger? That I cannot say. Not because I cannot say and know, because I don't know, but it's the tournament organizer who decided the rules.
But the rules are WPA rules, correct?
The rules are WPA rules, yes. But there are some added rules tournament specifically for the Predator tournament series.
And they need to be, right? Because there's obviously, the format of the tournament requires a couple of goofy special rules.
I don't know if the format of the tournament requires it, but they put it in nevertheless. They operate under the standard WPA rules, but there are additions that are tournament specific to the Predator series, and this is one of them. So you can argue if it's Predator who put it in because of some goofy incidents about players putting the lag ball on the foot rail and play from there instead of on the head string. Those are some of the reasonings behind it.
There were 7 pages of rules.
Mm.
And they included what they called exceptions to WPA rules,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, led into some of the equipment, 10 ball format, you know, racking, shot clock, mm-hmm. dress codes, things like that. Mm-hmm. So those are added to the standard WPA rules by the promoter, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but most of the, you know, the rules that were in there were WPA regulations, were EPBF documents.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was EPBF referees, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And so it was, you know, the EPBF protocol on how rules are interpreted, handled, followed, and things like that. And I will argue that whether they're following those rules to the letter of the law because a gun was put to their heads or they just mm-hmm. like rules, I think that they were heavy-handed in the way they were enforced. I mean, I was there. There were some refs that could have been a hell of a lot more diplomatic and professional about the way rules were enforced. I think that there were rules that, you know, there's common sense elements that can certainly be added in if a referee gets dressed down because he didn't, you know, handle a situation the way the rules call for, then, you know, then they've got to determine whether that was worth the risk. But I just thought that. And also, yes, the players were advised. I also have argued that, listen, these guys play in, you know, 20 tournaments a year, 25 tournaments a year from more than a dozen different promoters with 2 dozen different formats and 7 dozen different disciplines and all that. And do I expect, you know, Taiwanese, Japanese, Filipino, American, South American players to all know these rules and have them memorized to the letter of the law before they walk into the arena? No. I mean, there's got to be some common sense and some rational approach to dealing with these that keeps the focus on the play. I mean, you know, you're a big sports fan, Jin. You know that the best referees are the ones you don't notice.
Correct, but isn't that one of the main flaws in our sport over the last years, that when you go to a tournament, the first thing you have to ask is, what are the rules?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it.
Yes, you can have different disciplines, but they should each have just one set of rules.
Okay,
yeah, of course.
Beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Players are used to this now, and they know that when they go to a tournament, they better figure out what the certain rules are for the breaking format, for the racking, for black.
Yeah.
So they know that these are things that they need to figure out before they get started. Now, if you're going to make rules, I'm no problem with making rules, but if you're going to make a rule that's a little bit more different, like the lag rule, it has to be specifically to solve a problem, not to create another problem. Now, if the problem was that they felt that some players were waiting too long to lag and see how good their opponent's lag was or the speed that they hit the lag at, to then think that you have solved this by saying, okay, you have to hit your lag before your opponent's ball hits the bottom rail, otherwise we lag again, is creating more of a problem because that gives you the opportunity to watch your opponent lag and wait to see whether you think they've hit a good one or not. If you think they've hit it well, you just do nothing and you get another shot at it. I mean, that's what they basically created there with that rule. So if they're going to create rules to solve problems, they better make sure that they're not creating a bigger problem by doing it.
No, you're right. You can compound problems by getting into that.
Okay. Beyond beyond the shadow of a doubt, you're right, there should be one set of rules for every discipline across the board. So no argument there. However, at this moment in time, we don't live in a world that has one set of rules across the board.
Agreed.
So we have to work with what we have. And to come to your arguments, Mike, for the players, Taiwanese, Chinese, who come to all different tournaments, 12 different promoters, et cetera, I understand the human element of it. But at the end of the day, if you want to make your sport professional, you can expect also from the player side professional behavior in the fact that they, when entering a tournament,
don't disagree,
should at least inform themselves about specific rule sets, especially because that's an important thing that is forgotten into the commentary, is that it was the third tournament in a row that rule was in place. It was not the first, it was the third.
Well, so, it was definitely the first one where it was enacted that rigorously. Out of curiosity, you're right, Bob. You're right in that. I mean, part of a professional player, part of your responsibilities as a professional player is to professionally make yourself available to know the rules, right? I mean, you have to prepare yourself for it. So, I mean, that's definitely an argument. But Mike, I guess you were there on site. Of the 64 players in the World 10 Ball, let's just talk about the World 10 Ball because it's a little bit easier. How many of those 64 players do you think spoke English fluently enough? Because I'm sure that this rule book was given strictly in English. I'm sure it wasn't given in, 17 different languages. How many of them do you think were...
It wouldn't have mattered whether they wrote it in every language. No one was going to read it because they don't read it. Sure. So that's on the players. I get that. I just think that there's, when something... is odd as, like, say, the lag rule is in place and someone does it. There's a way of handling it, and there's a way, right way to me, and a way of handling it the wrong way. And the wrong way is, I can't wait for someone to do this so I can jump on them and tell them they lose the lag. And there's a way that says, gentlemen, we're getting ready to lag. Remember, the rule is you cannot touch the ball once I put it down. There's 7 seconds out of your life that would have solved every problem at every table, every time. So I just think that, it's frustrating that we're sitting here weeks later talking about rules from a tournament. And that, to me, tells you that that there were ways to prevent this from being a topic of discussion. And that's the only frustrating thing to me. I don't mind rules. I don't even mind strict rules. I want to make sure everybody knows them. I want to make sure that they've been given the opportunity to understand them. All those kind of things. That's part of being a professional sport too.
Okay. True. So would this not be the funniest thing that ever happened in the history forever? Premier League pool, the first match that's out there. Let's just FSR and Joshua Phil, they're out there. Wouldn't it just be the funniest troll of all time for them to have to lag the balls like 7 times because they keep getting one tiny little detail wrong? Wouldn't that just be the funniest
Emily's
troll
on,
ever?
Emily,
can you please do that?
Premier League of Pool doesn't have those rules. Aaron Lake makes a very good point here in the comments.
It's not about having the rules. It's about trolling it, right? How funny would it be if, like, Josh goes out there and just hits the first break the first lag at 400 miles an hour and doesn't give FSR the option to get the ball anywhere close to the bottom rail by the time he hits it? And then, they flip-flop it.
Premier League. It's not a rule at the Premier League.
Jim, it's not. It's, the point is.
But you can't. They're not going to lag.
You're just trolling the event.
Yeah, but they're not going to lag 400 times because there's no rule that says they have to lag again.
Sure, Jim, you're getting too complicated. The thing is, of course, those aren't the rules because they're not that stupid, right? But the idea is, like, it'd just be fun to troll with it, right? Wouldn't that just be fun if you saw that?
No, the troll would be the next Predator event that you turn around to your opponent and say, right, you lag first, I'm not going to lag. And the next one, I'll lag and you don't lag. And we'll see how many times we lag before somebody turns around and says, hold on a minute, guys, you're both supposed to lag at some stage.
Things like that happened with the bathroom break when
they went together.
Well, yeah, where they both took the penalty together because they realized how dumb it was. I've seen that happen before. Yeah. So it's when things like that happen, then okay, let's rethink how we.
I actually saw that happen at the European Championships, where one of the players had already had his bathroom break,
but wasn't feeling very well, but hadn't announced beforehand that he wasn't feeling well. If you announce beforehand that you're not feeling well, then they will take that into account. If you need a second bathroom break or whatever, then they know. But you have to announce before the beginning of the match. And he hadn't announced before the beginning of the match, started to feel a little bit unwell, asked for a second bathroom break, was told he wasn't allowed one. His opponent had also had a bathroom break, and they said, if you leave, then it's going to be a one-rack penalty. So the opponent said, let's just go together, and we'll both take one rack. So they both left together, which, yeah, you know, that's fair enough. But back to Aaron Lake makes a good point. He says he thinks that Matcham takes feedback from players and adjusts their rules and policies, but WPA events tend to proactively predict and try to solve them without consultation of sorts. I think that could be a fair point, to be honest. Matcham uses the players or has used the players to create their set of rules, you know?
Okay. That can be a slippery slope. But it also, it's always going to keep your talent happy.
No, but this is what we have been discussing for months now, that the WPA doesn't listen, doesn't communicate well. Yeah. This is the same thing.
It also means that Emily's sitting there saying, listen, guys, if you want to complain about the rules and the format we use, it's you guys that created it. You know, I didn't create it. You created it. I just implemented it. If you're going to complain about it now, hey, you asked for it this way. You know, so, yeah.
I'll think they'll change it. Next tournament, next Predator event, it will be changed.
I think there's they have to. Much, I think they'll have learned some lessons. I think what Mike said there is a quite simple solution. The countdown is also a simple solution. We're going to give you a countdown from three, and then you both have to hit within a second or 2 seconds after I get to three. That way you alleviate it. If you don't, it's a foul. So I say to you, players ready, you set yourself over the ball. 3, 2, 1, lag.
It's not a foul. It's loss of lag. It's something else.
I mean,
what you're talking about
is definitely legit. But when has this ever been an issue? I mean, this kind of goes back to the basis of all this is you're solving a problem that doesn't exist. Who out there is actually messing up the lag enough or trying to cheat enough on the lag?
Well, that's what I mean. It must have been an issue. It must have been a problem they saw needed to be solved.
I don't think so. I think it's. I bust into EPBF all the time, but these are EPBF rules that were injected into this WPA event. And to me, the EPBF has been notorious over the years for overthinking things, being very rigid, coming up with
but
this
it's,
type,
it's
you know, these type
EPBF,
of things.
But it's not EPBF.
I've never seen a lag have to be redone because of this in any EPBF tournament. European.
I was told in Las Vegas that this has happened in EPBF.
I've never seen it.
Yeah. So
no.
Maybe they all know the rules.
They have 12 events a year for 20 years. Of course, it's happened at some point in time. Anybody here name any situation where it actually happened? I'm sure it did happen, but can anybody name it? Who cares? It's not a problem.
Okay, I agree. But the rule set that is implemented by EPBF are the standard WPA rules. The extra pages are not EPBF. Huh?
Sure. I think we should probably put another rule into the next one that you can't tackle your opponent when they're down on a 10 ball, or you can't shoot spitballs at the ref in between your innings. I mean, all of these things never happen, but you know they could happen. Why don't we start writing rules for those too? It just makes no sense.
I don't know. It confused me as well.
I will say, if I ever play Jim in a tournament, I am going to be shooting spit wads at him the entire match.
Well, you're going to have plenty of time in your chair to prepare them all.
I knew that was coming.
They just have to make one simple set of rules and that's it, and get rid of the silly ones. And they'll do that now because they had way too much backlash of the current situation. So I think they'll adjust. But I agree.
It's a tough one for the referees because, you know, if you see something and it's a rule, you probably feel a bit stupid yourself doing it, but it's your job to do it, I guess.
That was my whole point. There were two situations at minimum that I know of where the referee actually acknowledged to the players before lagging, dear players, I put the ball on the table, you cannot touch it, and where the player afterwards did. And so he calls a loss of leg.
I mean,
because it's a habit. Yeah. I also do when I play a leg with my cue. I'm like pushing it left or right a little bit. Everybody does it. But it's a habit. It's a natural thing. Yeah. And the referee clearly said.
Explain to me why the rule exists. Who felt the rule needed to be in there and why?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. As far as I'm aware, the only rule for lagging is the cue ball has to be behind the head string. It can be anywhere behind the head string.
That's my understanding. And you can't hinder your opponent. Yeah, it has to be behind the head string, and you can't hinder your opponent.
If you move the cue ball and you're over the head string and you hit,
who felt that needed to be changed?
Again, I don't know what the problem is that needed to be solved by putting this rule in. I don't know,
but it's not EPBF.
But I mean, going back to, I agree with Mike that, I mean, I know a lot of the EPBF refs. I've come across them in matches and seen them, and there is a large majority of them are they talk to you equally when they're explaining something to you, when they're refereeing. There are some that talk down to you and think they're in charge. You mentioned that a good referee is never seen in sport, and there's some of them that do. You do have a small minority that want to be everyone to be aware that they're there, rather than just staying in the background and doing their thing when it's needed.
I will reply to Aaron Lake. Yes, a video was actually produced and posted on the rules page for the Predator events. Where one of the referees went through some of the rules.
I mean, nobody here is going to argue that the rules do exist and they could be enforced if they wanted to be enforced. I just don't understand why this was the event that they started to enforce them as if they were like life or death decisions. And they decided that this whole patch situation, the bathroom situation, I mean, sure, these rules technically existed before. I just don't understand why you would, all of a sudden, all of the rules that you could potentially enforce at the strictest level possible, and
because they were obligated to.
Let's not forget Sackgate.
They were also
an EPBF. Also an EPBF, but I'm not sure about the ladies. Yeah. I think for the men, you're not allowed to show any. You've got to have your socks above the bottom of your trousers.
I completely forgot about that. We didn't even discuss that.
Tony Chohan's got no chance of playing in a WPA or EPBF tournament. No chance. No.
Mike, you want to explain that? Because I don't even think we talked about that last week when we were talking about all the stupid rulings that were.
What's that?
The Sockgate. What? I don't remember which lady it was, but
Cheska.
I guess. Yeah.
Cheska was playing. Chow and the, I don't know,
quarterfinals, right? the women's shootout or something of the
showdown. Yeah.
I've seen socks be an issue at EPBF events before.
Yeah.
Yes, me too.
And they basically told her that she couldn't play unless she had taller socks, right?
Correct. Her pant leg weren't touching the top of the socks. I mean, it's okay.
What are you even doing that? What do you know?
Falls under the heading of "Don't be a nit."
Yeah, good call, Dom.
Yeah. So
I don't know. Anyways. I mean, it is like I think you said this earlier, Mike, and we're another like 10 minutes into the conversation at this point. It's sad that we're talking about rules 2 weeks away from an event.
Yeah, well.
But I don't know what else were we going to talk about. We were going to talk about the referees, and then. Well, I don't know. Do you want to jump into the U.S. Open stuff?
We can talk about the post Emily made 10 minutes ago. Let's talk.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about captains. U.S. captains.
No, she didn't say anything about Moscone Cup. What post did she make?
She just posted it 8 minutes ago. I saw it too.
Yeah.
What was it?
Jim, let's talk about Moscone Cup. She says, and I quote, okay, ... Let's talk about Moscone Cup captains.
What?
I mean,
the floor is yours.
Whoa.
Do I have to jump in here? Or am I just going to get it?
She's not going to jump in here and hijack our show.
That's not the way it works.
Nate's got a well-crafted, carefully prepared script for the show, and no promoter jumps in and just hijacks it when we were talking about a different promoter.
Yeah. Well, I guess Mike, you're kind of making a joke here, but I actually do want to, I do kind of find this whole event sad as like a whole. You're gonna struggle to find somebody who was more of a Predator advocate for than I was for their events. I honestly thought they were incredible. I thought they were riveting. I thought they were exciting, and I thought that they were well put together from start to finish for the most part. This kind of shot that in the foot for me. I mean, this event really left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth, as well as, you know, a lot of pool players.
Not me. Not really. I thought that it was I thought they were still very well organized run events. I thought they looked good. I thought the scheduling was, there were a couple of, you know, small things here or there that maybe they would have changed in retrospect. But I think overall it was a fun event to watch. I did enjoy, regardless of how long they were, I enjoyed the best of five sets. I thought that Windows match is good. The best of three sets, races to four, winter breaks, not a big fan of that still. But the races to five were really good. Thankfully, I still don't like the shootout. And thankfully,
well, that's what I was going to ask you.
I think only one of them ended in a shootout. And that was
the Dennis one, right? Match. Was it Dennis? Was it Scott?
No,
Dennis against Jason was a shootout.
Yeah, Dennis and Jason had one. Dennis and Jason.
In a five set?
No, three set.
Yeah, I'm talking about the five set. The five set match was when it got to the final 16 down. There was only one that was
Sky and Naoki.
That's when Sky lost to
Naoki.
Yeah. So thankfully, it didn't come down to a bunch of shootouts, because I don't like that as a way of settling, you know, guys who've battled through five sets, you know, 30 games, whatever, and they're going to take spot shots. But I thought that those matches were really good. I thought that showed what the format could be if it's, you know, where, you know, matches, some of those matches, Franz took, Albans, they took like 4 hours plus. But it was an exciting 4 hours. It was like watch tennis. You don't take your eye off it because everything changes so quickly. You're down two sets like Fran was, but it's race to four, winner break. All of a sudden it's two sets apiece and you're playing a fifth set. That was engaging, really. That was good stuff to me. I that part of the format, I did enjoy.
Yeah, same here. Take away the shootout, make it all races to five, and you got a top format.
You could be like tennis. You could be like the last rack, you know, yeah. Someone's got to win by two.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you could do something like that. At least they're still playing pool. You know, so I thought that overall the event, I thought it was great for the women, the two tournaments there, and the doubles. I love any kind of mixed doubles or team event is always fun. So I thought that I liked the events. There were things that, you know, bothered me, but that's all right.
I do like the race to two, or win by two. I've been advocating that since the beginning of the Predator stuff instead of the shootout. I always thought that would be much more exciting. And the win by two doesn't necessarily make sense, only because you're trying to fit it in a 45 minute or an hour and 15 minute type of match so that you can make it, you know, for TV. But I don't know. I've never complained about somebody who, you know, was set, you know, tied 2-2 and set.
They're streaming. This isn't network. This isn't network television.
No.
And if you
I think ultimately the idea was to get to
race. If you have two ahead in a fifth set, and I've stayed there, I've invested 4.5 hours to watch.
Who's going to turn it off?
You know, 4.5 sets. Yeah, I'm engaged at that point. I'm sticking around to watch the final. I hope it goes to 18-16. So
I hope it goes 30-32.
So, you know, that's just my thought on the event itself. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Well, I've always been a pretty big advocate of the Predator events, but unlike you, I did leave this with a pretty bad taste in my mouth. I just think that, I mean, I had to think about it this morning. So I was talking about this with somebody on Facebook, and I had to actually think about it for a second. I'm like, actually, who won these events? Oh yeah, it was Lee Van and Carlo. Like that in my mind is secondary to the event as a whole, who actually won the event. I mean, I had to think about it for a second because my lasting takeaway from the event isn't the winners. It's you know, the circus that surrounded it. But I mean, we don't have to go into that. We discussed it a lot. Let's jump into the U.S. Open. I guess we had discussed everything but the eight ball last time, because just when we did the event last time. So Victor Zielinski, he wins his first major. What do you think, Mike?
did you just call that a major?
Only because it's a Polish. Only because it's a Polish winner. Only because it's a Polish winner.
Just because it's called the U.S. Open, you know, doesn't mean it's a major, but it doesn't mean it was a crap tournament either. I mean, those fields were some stacked fields coming out of the World 10 Ball. So that was really good competition. Really good field, better than most, you know, World 9 Ball Tour regional-ish events. Far better.
Oh, definitely.
Far better. So,
you know that this never would have been the field.
They were really
good. Had the 10 Ball not been there, unfortunately. Really good.
Well, that's the way you stack tournaments if you're smart.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly.
So, I'm happy for Victor. He's, you know, good because he had a couple events that he just did not play well in Vegas. So, and we've all seen Victor look like he gets really down on himself and, you know, pack it in type of thing. So for him to bounce back from a couple subpar performances and go through that field like that, I thought was pretty, you know, I'm happy for him.
He's always used to having success at this group of tournaments as well.
Yeah.
So to perform poorly for his standards, but to come back, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just loves Vegas. Whenever he's there, he seems to win something.
He wins something. Yeah, yeah.
And I will say this: he's Alex Pagulayan, Raymond, and Victor Zielinski might be the only players in the world that can beat Josh consistently. He's had a really good track record against Josh.
Wouldn't say beating him once is consistently.
Consistently, consistently is an overreach there, Nate.
Have you guys seen? When was the last time Alex Pagulayan? Are you talking about the Victor part of this, the Alex part of this, or the Ray? Because the Ray is obviously a joke.
I'm talking about the Raymond part of this. As amazing as it is, you can't call that consistent.
That's in for a joke. But Alex Pagulayan and Victor Zielinski do have a very good record against Josh Filler. And
Everyone's got their bogey players.
Victor
is always players you struggle against.
Obviously, Victor Zielinski gets the win. FSR gets second place. And then Josh Filler, Victor beats him 8-3 in the first third second. Lee Van Corteza gets fourth. Albin Ocean and Bader Aldawadi are fifth, sixth. Sisman Kural and Roland Garcia are seventh, eighth. So
how good a week or 2 weeks did Lee Van Corteza have? Wow. He was up there in all the events, wasn't he?
Yeah, he played. Yeah, he did pretty well. He's still alive in the banks, I think, too.
In the banks as well, yeah. I think it was Bill and Shane had the hot seat.
Yeah.
Shane,
Billy, I think, is. Yeah.
Giving an update.
I think Billy's waiting for the Lee Van match against.
Shane beats Billy Hill. For the hill. So what'd you say? Sorry, Mike. What'd you say?
No, I think that Lee Van plays Sky, I think, to see in the winner plays Billy and the winner plays Shane. Okay.
Yeah, so Lee Van is actually up 3-1 right now on Sky. Winner plays Billy Thorpe. So it's a race to five. So Lee Van needs one more game. Oh, and it says pending now. So that might actually be, be over.
It looks like it could be a guaranteed All-American final.
Well, it's banks. There's a decent chance of that in banks.
How can it be a guarantee? Billy and Lee Van are about to play to get to Shane. I mean,
You just said that Sky was beating Lee Van, no?
No, Lee Van is up 4-1.
Ah, okay.
And it is now saying pending, so the match actually could be over right now. Actually, no, it is because it is down 1 on the B side. So yeah, Lee Van won that set 4-1. So Sky Woodward gets fourth place. Lee Van and Billy to get back to the finals. What do you think of this? I mean, as a group here, what do we think of this not true double elimination, the single finals, the single match finals? What do you guys think of that?
I've always been for it.
Yeah, I like
You've
that.
Been for it?
I've always been for it.
Yeah,
I always like it when they extend it a little bit. But, you know, I've always been for it because the undefeated guy – you know, whoever wins technically, whoever wins has the best winning percentage for the tournament.
I mean, by default, I guess, right? Because they had to have won one extra match, right?
Correct.
Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't like true double elimination. That's boring.
No, I agree. You got two guys in the final. They play one set. That's it.
Yeah.
How you got to the final is how you got to the final. But you're in the final now. This is it. You play one set.
All right.
Yeah.
So do you prefer that over the matchroom format, meaning the double elimination to a single elimination knockout stage?
No, I think that's even better. Because you basically, if you ask the players, they look at it like two tournaments. You're playing one tournament, you're playing one tournament to qualify.
I don't mind it because it's easier to follow. But I hate when they like do it at like 32 or 64 or something. No. Yeah, you should play double elimination down to 16 at the earliest and maybe 8. Then you've played a real tournament to me. And I'll say it though, I'm blue in the face. I want to see one of these major tournaments go to double elimination the whole way through to the Final Four like they used to, because I think that's a great tournament. And two, I think it makes, you know, one of the majors different than all the others. I don't want cookie cutter formula.
Well, that would be perfect for the U.S. Open then, right?
That's what it used to be.
Given its history.
Yeah. Yeah,
I like that double elimination until you've got two winners and two losers, and then you play your semifinal.
Well, actually, you could do it through the whole tournament, and then basically you have a stepladder final, right? Your you know, losers bracket semifinal is basically four plays three, the winner plays two, and the winner that plays the number one seed. So
I hear what you're saying, but I don't think it's very understandable for a viewer, and I think that's their primary concern.
I don't know. I'm going back. I mean, 10-pin bowling.
You're a graphic away. I mean, just 10-pin
bowling
the
in the U.S. is a typical, you know, has been on for TV for 50 plus years, and it's the way they've run every tournament. You play down to the final four, and then it's a stepladder.
I mean, part of that is also just having a graphic on screen, right? Because everybody knows how to follow a bracket. It doesn't matter what you're actually, you know, covering, whether you're covering college wrestling or pool or bowling or football. I mean, we all know how to read a bracket. So
I think the thing is that, I mean, for you guys in the States, you have other sports that do this. Over here in Europe, I don't know about Asia, wherever. Over here in Europe, this is the only sport that I know that plays in any sort of double elimination format that gets played. Everything else is you're in the tournament, you play, and if you get beat, you're out. Yeah. And it's ranked, it's seeded tournaments depending on how many players are in, and you know the top seed plays against the lowest, number two plays against the second lowest, and that's your bracket, and you do it.
You can do that in sports when there's enough. You can do that in sports when there's enough money in it.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying that if you're talking about viewers, Nate said everybody knows how to follow a bracket. Yeah. If I'm talking about viewers over here in Europe, they don't know how to follow a double
elimination. That's what I'm saying.
They don't understand it. They don't understand how it works. Yeah. They don't, you know.
Well, you know how to follow a seeded bracket, right? What he's talking about is just that.
It works with the matchroom tournaments because they'll play the double elimination up until like the Saturday or the Friday. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes on TV on Sky Sports, then you're into single elimination and it's very transparent who's playing who and who plays who when they win.
Of course. I mean, you know, that makes sense, but it's not my favorite.
I actually do prefer that as well, personally. But I mean, there also
there's
a lot of history of double elimination that's just being
wiped away. It does solve a little bit the idea of everything being the same. You can do double elimination all the way through. You can do double elimination to the last four.
I think some of the majors should have some kind of tweaks or different kind of format that distinguishes one from another. US Open, given its history, should not be the same as the UK Open, which is 2 years old.
Yeah,
you know, and so
I agree.
So, I'd like to see them, put some things in place that take care of that.
I think that's something that I could see tournaments happening in the future where it's groups, you know, and the winner of each group goes through to the next phase, and then there's new groups and that kind of thing, and they do that in the ultimate pool. They call it the Champions League. It's very similar to the Champions League football. You know, you're in groups of four, everyone plays against each other, the winners go through and they go into another group, and then there's a group made, and then I could see something like that happening in the future. There's so many different formats that can be used in order to give every event its own individual look.
Kind of thing. I mean, well, they do that for soccer too, right?
Well, the only thing they can't really do, other than the Masters and the World Cup of Pool and stuff like that, is to have just single elimination from the start, because that's just players traveling the world for just one.
The little invitational made for TV programming events, you know, betting events.
Especially when normally there's another big tournament played alongside it, so then they're already there for that anyway, and then it's fine. You know.
Speaking of matchroom, should we throw Emily a bone and talk about Moscone Cup captains?
Let's do that.
Emily, I've already booked the leave. I'm available again. You got my resume last year. It was absolute belter. Just let me know when you want me to
start. All right, speaking of gambling,
what are the odds?
Go ahead,
Before we go into the captain stuff, let me get my ad read out of the way, because we at the Cue It Up podcast love ourselves some Magic Mind, including Jim. Don't you, Jim?
are we sponsored by this stuff again, are we?
Yes, we're sponsored by them again.
Oh, God.
Yummy, yummy Magic Mind. It gives me the stress relief I need to be able to put up with Jim's crap. Ain't that right, Jimbo?
Oh, yeah.
My problem is I have to deal with Jim, and it's very stressful, and it's like dealing with it
to drink something to get through my frustration with someone. It's going to be a hell of a lot stronger than that little thing you just threw out. Yeah. Well, at the very least, Jim, at the very least.
Dealing with Jim is like dealing with like a stray cat in heat. It's psycho, and it just never shuts up. And that's like Jim. And my way of dealing with him is by drinking Magic Mind, because it has all of the ingredients necessary to de-stress me while making me nice and mentally alert. And it's got all natural ingredients, which is super, super fun. And Jim, why do you look so happy right now?
You know, it has natural ingredients.
Because my way of dealing with Nate is by doing this.
Oh, that hurts. Jim logged in. That's not.
You know,
fun.
It has natural ingredients. Gin.
Gin
does
that. Nate's upset because I logged in on the host thing, so I can do anything that he can do now.
As a side note to this, Mike, I've come up with a really cool place. Not a come up with it, but I saw a really cool place that you and I are going to go to the next time we're in London together. So you have to go to the Moscone Cup next year, and I'll talk about that with you after this beautiful ad. Get yours too. What?
Let me know.
Oh yeah, one second, buddy. 1 second. You can get yours too and join me being de-stressed and mentally focused by using code Cue It Up Podcast. And so this sucks, because like the second part of this ad isn't downloading, so I can't actually see what I'm supposed to say at this point. Ad-lib.
A hint, Nate. Take a hint.
You need to go to magicmind.com/queueitup and enter in Cue It Up 20 to get 56%. Why 56? That's such a weird number, but it's a huge number, 56% off of your subscription for the next 10 days with code QIT UP 20. So
that's the kind of number that somebody who drinks Magic Mind comes up with.
Yeah, because it's awesome. That's why. Yeah. All right. So with that, back to what I was talking to you about. There is a place in London, just maybe about a 30 to 40 minute drive away from Ali Pally, called the Ginstitute, Mike. Have you heard of it?
No.
So the Ginstitute is a self-proclaimed institution where you learn anything and everything that you need to know about the wonderful alcohol gin. And then you get to take all that you've learned and make your own bottle and take it away with you. And then the recipe, if you really like it, you can actually – they save your recipe. And if you want a bottle of your own created gin in the future, you just call up, give them the reference number. They make you a bottle of your gin, and they ship it to you. How cool is that? You and I got to go. Never mind, I guess.
Mate's over the moon about this idea.
The enthusiasm is dripping off the screen,
Mike,
by the way.
Calm down, Mike. Calm down.
I really thought that you'd find that fun, Mike. You don't find that fun?
No, my audio and video, my audio and hearing went wonky. and all of a sudden it just clicked off. You guys can still hear me?
Yeah, are you being serious?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm all right so you, then.
So you
I'm
don't,
hearing
you...
I'm hearing through the computer now, not through my headphone, which is weird. But anyways.
All right, I guess I'm not going with Mike. Anybody else want to go?
We'll go to the Institute. Apparently, I need some of that magic mind that you've got there, Nate, because I'm losing.
Good stuff. So. I'm telling you, it's good stuff. All right, let's talk about European Moscone Cup captains. Chris Alexander, the biggest clown the world has ever known, has his idea. What are our ideas, Bob? What do you think?
Moscone, I think Jeremy's time is up. Unfortunately, but he didn't get anything going, so I think he's out. Scott Frost seems the obvious pick. I hope they don't go with Earl, because then you make it a show again more than an actual event. For Europe, tough question. Depending on rookies in the team or not, I think it shouldn't be Ralph, or it should be Ralph. If it's the same team again, you can never know. But if it's the same team again, yeah, then keep Ralph, I guess. He has a nice record. If it's not the same team, which it probably will be or not will be, there will be different players in there, I assume. I think you need a different guy. Who? I would put my money on a Ralph Souquet or a Darren Appleton, but are they willing? Are they still feeling too much of a player instead of a coach? That's not up to me to decide, but that's my idea in short.
Pinoza, what do you think?
I think.
Oh, now we lost you.
Oh, did we?
Now your mic is gone.
Yeah, oh. You're back now.
Now you're
Am I back?
Yeah, what a weird, what a weird really situation.
Really weird stuff going through here. But anyway,
get your hamsters running a little bit faster. That'll help you out.
I have no idea why it's doing this, but I don't see how you turn to Ralph and say, you know, thanks for chipping in last year. We don't need you anymore. I don't know. That would be kind of cold.
I do. I do. No, he undermined himself, Mike. If your own captain goes on TV and says, "I'm the best paid wrecker," then you're undermining your own credibility. He was the laughing stock of everybody. So with all the commentaries
how much of that is poking fun at the US and just basically like throwing barbs, and how much of that is like actually like being real?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't. I really don't think so. I think his demeanor, how he sat there, how he behaved, how he acted, if that is an act, then give the man an Oscar. Yeah. Give the man an Oscar. So I think he it's perfectly understandable if Matchroom would say, look, you had some saying, some quotes that were very unlucky, that came off really wrong. We're going to replace you. Thanks. But the team is oiled up. It's ready to go. And until we get in a slump, we're going to change captains every year just to bring in a new face, for example. I don't know. But I think you have plenty of reasons to change Ralph out.
Okay, so out of curiosity, would you have had the same problem you had with his comments if it wasn't centered around money? Because that's essentially what he was saying. That was the easiest $40,000 he's ever made. Yeah.
Me?
I mean, if he just said that was the easiest win that we've ever had with Europe, would you have had a problem?
No, the money doesn't matter. You're making a mockery out of the event. The money, I don't care about the money.
No, the U.S. players made a mockery out of it, not showing up to compete. He just pointed out the mockery.
I think what Bob's saying is the gist of the comment was, all I've done is rack the balls for them.
Yes. That's the gist of the comment, indeed. Sure. Thank you, Jim.
If he didn't say that, people would have thought differently.
I mean, I guess.
You still have the speculation. You can think behind the scenes he's still doing some stuff. People can speculate that he's only racking the balls. And, but people may also say that he's valuable.
You read that as like that, but I read that as like he's making fun of the U.S., pointing out that it wasn't a competition. Like, that just means, like, that's the way I read it. I read it as the U.S. didn't show up. We smashed them, and this is me kind of poking fun at them.
He said it before the event started. How can he make fun of the USA and there wasn't a ball hit?
If he said it before the event, then what that's telling me is he has so much faith in his players that he doesn't have to get in their way and overcoach them. I mean, part of being a good coach is like knowing when to coach and when to sit back, right?
You're playing devil's advocate, but I am
playing devil's advocate. You're right. But I also look at it as I also look at that as being true. Like, if the U.S. is going to continue to show up the way that they've showed up the last few years, you could put a monkey in a tuxedo out there and he's going to do the exact job he needs to do. The point is, unless the event is competitive, the coaches mean nothing. He could just be the world's greatest racker and it doesn't matter.
But those are two different things. We're talking about, could he be replaced?
Well, like I said, you could put a monkey in a tuxedo out there, and it's not going to make a difference if the U.S. continues not to show up.
Yeah, put Mario He in there and put Alexa Peyselj in there. We'll see if a monkey can do it then.
If the U.S. continues to show up the way that they are, how many European teams do you think you could put together that would beat the U.S. team that showed up last year?
Yes, but how many times is the same team going to come out 2 years in a row and be that confident and work that well together? That was the toughest Moscone ever for USA to win, and it was the easiest one for Europe to win. That there was so much had to go wrong for Europe not to win that, basically because it was the same team, they were defending, they knew each other, the coach didn't have to do anything, it was at home in Europe.
They were all in stroke. They were all exactly. playing great. All playing David was, finished was, the year strong. Was, Jason finished the year strong.
No animosities between players.
There was a
no
animosities.
All
there was a monster. That was the best prepared team that's ever played in a Moscone Cup for Europe, I think.
They did that preparation
a year ago.
Well, keep in mind, Jim, that was also the best team that America has probably fielded in 10 years.
Individually. But they had no preparation together. They hadn't done it before.
Team that we fielded at least since 2018, and if that
team comes out again next year together, they will be a hell of a lot better than they were this year.
Can't argue with that. Assuming that they're all in stroke going into the season like they were last year. The way I look at it though is like you said, everything has to go wrong for Europe. There's a lot of things that have to go wrong, or U.S. really has to find their gear and be coming in hot. If the U.S.
They put up
zero fight last year.
But it's from the opening tip, it's not a question of fight. In pure quality, I think the U.S. can make a stand. I'm a U.S. fan for everybody who doesn't know it yet. I think pure quality U.S. can really compete. In my humble opinion, there was a clear lack of team management and coaching, and I'm not here to belittle Jeremy. I think what I saw of him, I don't know him personally, but what I see of him, what I hear of him is wonderful. But being a wonderful human being and knowing pool is not automatically a guarantee to translate, as in I'm now able also to translate this and to get this information to players that they absorb it and they can perform what I'm telling them to do. That's all different thing. Knowing the game and being a good coach are two different things. And there was a clear lack of management. I'm 100% sure put Lely in front of that USA team last year. Johan, maybe. That result is different. The farce that we saw with Shane not willing to play. The three matches of Fedor back-to-back-to-back where you're taking a huge gamble.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
Never fly with Lely. That would never fly with Johan. Never.
I'll tell you right now that happened. That happened because Fedor was the only player that wanted to play that day. I'm telling you what I know. I'm not telling you what I think.
The situation was the
only person that wanted to play.
Okay. But that situation says enough. Yeah, four players not rising up to the challenge would never happen under Lely or under Johan or under maybe some other person that you
may mention here or there. I think I think Jeremy lost his grip on the team in some way, shape, or form. Was it the year before? Was it that year? I don't know. Did something happen? I don't know. I have no inside information. But it was clear that the team was just not there for him, and he couldn't change the course. End sentence.
Can't argue with that. But yeah. I find all of this is a little bit rich when we're talking about. Essentially what we're talking about is like the U.S. is coming up short because they don't have the resources available to them, and Europe is winning, and yet we're going to try to make their coaches even better, and improve upon a coach that isn't doing anything. That's only going to make Europe even stronger still. Ultimately, this is an exhibition, and Matchroom wants it competitive.
It depends. That's one of the reasons I think they put Ralph in front of that group, because they said, okay, we're not going to enhance the Euros even further by putting a strong coach in front of it, but the group took care of itself.
Then you should be back, right?
Amazing.
Theoretically.
It's possible. But the question was, could you change him? And I say, yes.
All right, Spinoza, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of thinking the way you were going, Nate, and that's, if I'm Matchroom and I want to be competitive, am I going to change coaches and make them stronger? I don't think so. I want to put Ralph out there again and see if he can fade having to make real decisions. If he's got a different team, if the U.S. has a lead early, if the American crowd is wild, whatever, I want to see him under fire. And if you're Matchroom, is that your best opportunity to allow the match maybe to become a little more competitive without, without putting a farce in there as captain? That's certainly one way of looking at it.
As long as they don't announce the captains like in January, February, and that captain has a whole year and a budget like Johan had in, 2018, Mike, you can confirm.
Yeah.
Like Johan had a budget to do something, to have a boot camp, to have something X, Y, Z to get them to gel together, because it's a gelling issue. It's not a quality issue. Shane can play. Sky can play, Fedor can play.
It's not a gelling issue. It's a buy-in more than anything else. The players
semantics.
Don't want to be there.
That's semantics. If you gel as a team, you want to be there. If you want to be there, you will gel. So one goes hand in hand with the other.
The players gel pretty well together for the most part. They just don't want to be there after they start getting their butts kicked in. The first time they start getting their butt kicked, you start seeing people withdrawing and wanting being done with it, already counting their paychecks. Would a better coach keep them engaged longer? Yes, I'm not arguing with that. But gelling alone is not going to be the problem, I don't think.
Okay. I'm maybe oversimplifying it, but the point is that it's a mental thing. It's not a quality thing.
Yes, it's a buy-in thing, really, is what it is, and a fight at all costs type of thing, right?
Yeah. For me personally, if I may, just one more minute. For me personally, the moment, I think it was Sky that played Jason, and he got hammered, I think, and at some moment in time, I think Sky Golden breaks, and he high-fives Jason. Does somebody remember that?
Yeah.
That moment in time, I knew you're lost. You're celebrating that you won one rackle, like you're 4-0 behind, your golden break, and then you're high-fiving Jason.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at with this. Like, it's like the smallest amount of adversity hits, it's all right. Let's get this shit over with, and let's just get our $20,000 and let's get to the after party. I mean, Jim, tell me I'm wrong. I mean, you know the Moscone Cup probably better than anybody as far as like the behind the scenes stuff. You're with those players all the time. You're talking to them about it. What do you think?
There's two things you've got. You've got the two things that the USA have to fight against. Two weaknesses you have to fight against: the mental weakness and their actual ability. Or their performance, I would say. I won't call it ability, their performance out there. The performance has to be top. If you take those 10 players, then
the USA is filling the bottom three. If you just take that, those players and rank them 1 to 10, USA is probably filling the bottom.
You're putting Sky in there below everyone else?
No.
So Fedor, Shane, and Sky.
As Moscone Cup players, I'm putting the two rookies and Shane as the bottom three. Oh, just basically on Moscone Cup.
No, absolutely, yeah. And Shane doesn't necessarily have to be the... Yeah.
And what happened? This Moscone Cup is that Shane checked out too early. Shane checked out too early. And when Shane checks out, he has such an effect on the rest of the players because they know they need the Shane Van Boning, the 2018 Shane Van Boning, the 2019 Shane Van Boning. They need him. They can't have the Shane Van Boning who plays like your average pool player at Moscone Cup. And he checks out. So,
missing
Jeremy, whether or not it was always like this or it's just over the years, he was no longer able to bring Shane back into the match. And even to the stage where Shane was standing directly beside Jeremy, making fishing signs to all the players, with Jeremy sitting right beside him. His coach, his leader.
Or getting your second point and doing like the thing after beating Joshua Filler, right?
Yeah, okay. I don't mind him doing that because that's a bit of I have some, but the
score. I got a problem with it when you're down 10-2. How can you not have a problem with that?
The score line dictates how much that is actually worth, whether it's just seen as a joke or whether it's seen as something.
So, I think it was just because his record was like zero in whatever against Filler in Moscone Cup.
Yeah, okay, again, if you're out there thinking about what you're... If every one of those players goes out and plays thinking about the record they have in Moscone Cup, they're going to lose every year because none of them have a good enough record to win the Moscone Cup. So they can't be thinking about what's happened before. They need to be thinking about now and getting on with what we need to do now, not what's happened in the past. Now, Shane checked out too early. The players were not able to get him back in. I know there was efforts made to get him more engaged again. And Jeremy wasn't able to get him back in. I think we can all probably agree Jeremy's that was probably his last year. I think it looks like it's going to be Scott Frost. I know that Scott Frost has a relationship with Shane. I know that Shane contacts him during events for advice or Scott contacts him when he sees matches and sees things going on kind of thing, and Shane seems to react. So that's going to be one of that, assuming it is Scott Frost or whatever coach it is, that's going to be the main thing that he's going to have to address is, you know, Shane's going to be in the team regardless. So you've got to make sure that he's valuable in the team and he's not.
Do you think Scott Frost is the right choice?
I think he will be the choice.
That's not the question. Do you think he's the right choice?
I don't know him well enough as a coach. I think he's respected by the players. I think he has a good relationship with the players. Whether or not he's too friendly with the players and has to create some a bit more of a business kind of relationship with them, a working relationship or not, time will tell. I think that's one thing that the successful European coaches and the successful Moscone Cup coaches on both sides have been able to, for that 4 days or whatever they're running, they say this is now a business relationship. I don't care about the past that we've had as players against each other or the good times we've had in Vegas and all this kind of stuff. This is business. This is purely business from now on. And that's what brings you success. Jeremy seemed, I mean, I don't know what happened behind the scenes and stuff like that. I was not that kind of, I have some information, but I'm not sure if he ever lost his temper with anybody, if he ever had a shout at them, if he ever had an argument with any of them, if he just didn't, you know, read the Riot Act to his players. Sometimes you've got to do that. Sometimes you've got to go down and throw
Ray would have went to fisticuffs with him, he said.
You know, sometimes you've got to throw a shoe at somebody to get through at them, you know? I mean, you do whatever it takes. So, yeah, I think there'll be a change in the USA. Looks like probably Scott Frost. He's sort of been groomed for it now, hasn't he? Being brought into the match and seen and stuff like that. And I've enjoyed his commentary and stuff like that. He's obviously a knowledgeable.
His commentary is incredible.
Yeah. The European side, I mean, at the end of the day, you say that, you know, don't put a great captain in there because it just makes Europe stronger. Well, if you want the captain to have a negative influence over Team Europe, then you still need somebody in there that's going to make bad decisions.
And any bad decisions is just going to be one-off.
Ralph is in there making no decisions by the looks of things. Yeah. So how much of a negative effect can you have if you're making no decisions? You know,
as well as go back to Marcus Chamat and his little Napoleon hat.
Well, yeah, you might. I mean, I don't know. I don't agree with the whole idea of trying to sabotage Team Europe in order to make it a fairer match.
No, and I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about sabotaging Team Europe.
Just don't give them one of the good ones.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that he really didn't do anything to lose it. I want to see him under fire. I want to see him with two rookies on his team next year, playing in the U.S. and having to make a decision. Then we'll find out whether he can coach. But he might be able to. He might come up. He might be brilliant. He's a smart guy. He's a good instructor.
Let's say those circumstances. Does he make a decision, or does he still leave it up to the team?
That's what you're going to find out.
Are we going to find out? I don't think we ever will find out. Well, we'll find out from the players.
Oh, yeah. Players will let you know.
At the end of the day, I mean, I think he gets another shot. He just won 11-3. Yeah,
that's right.
You don't pull somebody after they've won 11-3. Do I think he's the right guy for the job? I haven't seen him coach, so I don't know whether he's a good coach or not. He seems like a very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
Moscone Cup is a little bit of a show. I don't think he quite has that personality. I don't think he's particularly Moscone Cup himself, you know. He keeps very within himself. He doesn't shout and scream, no fist pumps, nothing like that. I find his interviews quite difficult to listen to sometimes.
He's very dry. He's
very dry. I don't think his English is particularly good, whether it's just his accent. But I'm not sure if the players are really, you know, if they're really behind him the way they would the way they were with Lely, or the way they would be with a Niels or something like that. We'll wait and see. My prediction is that there'll be no change on Team Europe. And there'll be a change on Team USA, and it'll be.
I don't think there's any doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, that's kind of my prediction too. I like to see Ralph get back out there. I just don't see a reason why you would take it away when you won 11-3, even if you were made the comments that, well, that's, you know, you're just a rack boy. I understand that, but I don't know. I just don't see how any coach is going to come in and take. I mean, unless you're coming in with like a legend, like a Niels or something like that, but Niels probably doesn't want to do it because he still thinks that he can play in it. So the U.S. side of it, I've said this from the beginning, I'll continue to say it. I think Scott Frost's commentary is incredible. I'm very glad that he's been added to the Matchroom team. I don't see how he brings anything different than Jeremy Jones brings. He's still going to be with the players. He's still going to have a friendship relationship with them first. If you're going to bring somebody else in, you can't bring in somebody else in that has a years and years and years long friendship to somebody that the loyalty is not going to be towards the coaching. It's going to be towards your friends. Scott's been friends with these players for 20, 30 plus years, some of them longer. There's nothing that he brings to the table that's different than Jeremy in my mind. I would like to see somebody like Johan again. Obviously, Johan's not going to happen, but it would be nice to see somebody along those veins. I would like to see Alex Laidley on the U.S. side. And I know that we're like basically recycling old coaches from Europe, but I just don't see anybody on the U.S. side that brings anything different to where, you know, the true test of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results. And we're still putting in the same style of coaches in the U.S. What's different? What's different than Hatch than JJ? He's still just an ex-player.
No.
Because I mean, Hatch is more. Hatch will get in your face.
For example, the team chemistry as a whole also misses a Billy Thorpe kind of figure. What Jason is for Europe was Billy Thorpe in 1819, sure. For example. Hatch can also bring that America. Fire into it, whereas a Jeremy and Ralph for Europe or in this case Scott, in my humble opinion, because I don't know the man, so it's an assumption, will not light that fire by leading by example. And that's the point that for me maybe a Hatch can do different. Again, I don't know the man.
I don't argue with that. That's a thing. But whoever
just a.
whoever is going to have the spot, I would like to see them not be a friend to the players. I would like to see them be able to go into this with a role that I'm not your friend. I'm not going to coddle you. I'm going to do exactly what I think that I need to do to make this team a winning team.
That's the difference between Europe and America. Europe needs a captain. America needs a coach. In my humble opinion.
Well, the last time we had a coach, like you said, we won 2 out of 3 years.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But I'm not only because I'm looking back to that, but because all of the things that are going wrong at this moment in time for Team USA are only solvable by a coach and not a captain. Yep.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. To me, a coach to me is instructional, technique, things like that. I don't think these players need Dennis Hatch telling them how to stroke a ball. I think Moscone Cup always comes down to captains. You got the best five players on your continent. So I don't think a lot of coaching needs to be done. I think leadership.
We do not have the five best players on our continent. I know what you're saying.
Mike, I agree.
You need somebody that's going to hold these players accountable.
We mean the same, but we use a different term.
Pull your trousers up. Tomorrow is your day. You better get on it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But for me, a coach is somebody who does that, Mike.
I'm thinking leader more than coach. But.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say. A captain for me is just somebody who fills in the forms. Come on, hands together, 1, 2, 3, America, and yay, off you go. For me, I need a coach that can coach you mentally, that can get you fired up, that can say, like Jim says, hello. That can say, like Jim says, hey, come on, today is your day, today is your game, step up your game. That's for me as a coach. You say a leader, that's the same thing. It's a potato potato.
So, Mike, for you, who is that?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. A personality like a Dennis Hatch certainly fits that. I don't know if he's the type of guy that they're going to war with. But I don't know.
But something in that spectrum. I'm not saying Hatch per se. Like I said, I don't know the guy.
I get your argument, and I like it. I'm just not sure where the fit is.
You guys know more. You know more of those types of players than I do in the U.S.
Well, the U.S. doesn't really have many of those players, to be honest with you. I mean, from that previous generation, Mike, I mean, Mike Siegel's been thrown out in the chat. Mike Siegel would be the only player that would be potentially more disastrous than that, in my mind, would be Earl. I just don't see how Mike Siegel could ever be a captain that would be able to get the players behind him.
Jason in the chat says, no captains needed. Me and Sky will do the job.
We've already seen that Sky can't keep Shane accountable and engaged.
Sky's too nice. Mm-hmm. Rodney Morris.
Rodney, that's a good that's a good one.
Played in plenty of them, plenty of them. He's got respect to people, and he's an imposing kind of guy. If he gets on your shoulder and starts gives you that look kind of thing, you're going to wake up. You're going to Why not somebody like Rodney? He can be friendly when he needs to be friendly, and he can be a hard ass when he needs to be a hard ass.
Yeah, I think he's kind of in that Hatch mold, but probably has a little more
respect from the players.
A little more pedigree, and probably a little more, not saying Dennis Hatch is not respected, but a little more on that respect level from other players for what he's done in the past. So that's not a bad rationalization, Jim.
But the point is always also, do they want to step into the matchroom circus?
I'm sorry?
Will they step into the matchroom circus and play along with the rules and regulations? Because in 1718-19, Johan basically got free rein and got a budget. And like I said,
all that's changed now. And we were talking about
that's what I mean.
You were talking about this a little bit before. And I think that, there's no rush to name captains. There's in part because the year is so full of events that there's no time for boot camps and all that stuff anyways, for one. So, and for two, the players should have plenty of opportunity to play themselves into form. So I don't think there's a big necessity for the captain to be known in June or May so that they've got 6 months of prep time with the potential team. There's not room in the schedule for that anymore.
No, and there's enough other stuff going on for them to fill the social media.
Exactly. So there's no big yank for that, and don't expect these 6 week boot camps and big budgets for getting Team USA ready, things like that. There's no time for it.
Yeah, I can understand the no time arguments, but the argument of getting a team to work together to buy in, as Nate says, then you need to spend time with those players. You need to call those players, Zoom calls.
Well, they're all at the same events every single weekend.
I think that if you do something by July or August, that's plenty of time. I don't want to coach in my ear from May through December every time I play in a tournament.
That's a good way of getting your whatever you're preaching to them to start sounding old real fast, right? Because if you hear it for 6 months as opposed to a couple months. Yeah. No, I agree with that completely. I think in the past, the whole coaching stuff was a little bit forced on us because there was just less content Matchroom had. Well, there's less content, right? I mean, the point of Matchroom isn't it's not an event company, right? It's a marketing company. So part of marketing is just having constant flow of information and constant, promotions of stuff. And when you have the calendar that they have out there, they don't need to drum up all of this forced drama and Moscone Cup captain. I mean, we're sitting here talking about it, but that's because we all love the Moscone Cup, right?
True.
But like I said, if they want to take a risk and maybe completely destroy Team Europe, I'm available. We'll have a good time, whatever happens.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump into, I guess, the band then, Bob. Bob and Mike, what? Go ahead.
Quickly. Where's it going to be?
Vegas?
Nope.
Not Vegas.
Was it the
Atlantic City?
I've heard Atlantic City or Texas.
Atlantic City.
Yeah, I've heard.
I don't think it's going to be either one of them, Jim.
Ooh, Mike knows something.
No, I hear the same type of stuff that you hear. So, but I got a feeling it's not going to be either Texas or Atlantic City.
Vegas has been completely ruled out, huh?
No. I think Texas would be kind of a cool place to go. Actually, that would be.
Where do you think it will be if it's not going to be those places?
I can't go there. I don't know anything for sure, but I think I've heard enough that I probably shouldn't say anything because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. So. But it could end up being Texas or Atlanta. What the hell do I know? I mean, maybe this person doesn't know what you're talking about. But if I say what I think I've heard, then I don't want to be the guy to screw the pooch. So
you're a raving reporter. God damn it! Tell us what you.
I protect my sources at all costs. I'll go to jail for that.
I'm asking. I'm not.
I'll go to jail for that.
I'm asking for one of
I've been state. In jail for them.
I'm just asking you for a state.
United. But I wish they would announce it sooner than later. Let's get the ball rolling here. Let's get some excitement generated. And listen, no one loves to generate excitement on a 12-month schedule more than Matchroom. So I think as soon as, what they don't do is announce intentions before contracts are signed and T's are crossed and I's are dotted. So I think as soon as that happens, it's like with the whole Saudi thing. They've been working on this for well over a year, right? Never leaked anything to anybody because it's just not their style. So, I respect that.
Sure.
Well, we'll see on it, I guess. If it's at Atlantic City, that is going to that's going to be a place I will not go to again unless I absolutely have to. I hate that place. I hope not. Nashville would be fun.
I also have Florida mentions, I think, as well.
Yo, I've heard Florida too.
But apparently, the problem with Vegas was the Formula One. But the Formula One has happened like 2 or 3 weeks before, so I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. I heard it was potential of the last I heard they were there, that was being worked out potentially, but I guess not.
The F1, I think, has screwed, you know, so many things happening in Vegas that fourth quarter. It's driven the prices up even after the event because so much gets screwed up before the event. So, I think Vegas is kind of, I hope that they go back there at some point.
Well, go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No. There's an argument for finding a home and staying with it, and there's an argument for shifting around a little bit. So I would hope that if they went east or south, that they eventually went to Vegas and, you know, keep drawing different crowds, new crowds, bigger crowds by moving it around a little bit. I wouldn't be opposed to that. So.
There's actually a listener to the podcast who might get a little happiness out of hearing this that actually has connections to Formula One. And what I'm hearing from them is that Formula One isn't even going to happen in Vegas, that there's too much going on. It's too cold. Yeah. So it's too cold in Vegas to actually be able to make that event happen consistently. And if you're committing yourself to Vegas to it, then it has to happen. But there's actually a really, really good chance that it just can't because of how cold it is.
I thought they had like a 10-year agreement. So,
yes, and I've also heard that that could be lit up on fire just because of the temperatures. I don't know that it's true.
They race in the Middle East when it's 110 degrees at 9 o'clock at night.
It's not the heat, it's the cold.
The tires when they go around a corner.
No, it's not the heat. It's not the heat, it's the cold.
It's too cold.
It's the cold.
No, I know, but I'm just talking about temperature extremes.
Yeah, but the apparently I've heard this from a guy who's very big in the Formula One. He said that there was problems last year.
It's a real thing.
With the temperatures being too cold in Vegas for the night race and just dangerous, basically.
Yeah. Because if something goes wrong on that, something goes really wrong. I've actually heard that actually might not happen going forward.
And because it's a real thing. And because it's a street race, the roads are not made specifically for Formula One cars,
right.
Whereas real racetracks are. So they can't resurface them. They can't do crap with them. So it's just,
That's actually they're actually debating on whether or not they're going to continue doing that. That's
the anyway, let's move on. We want to talk about the bands quickly.
Yep, Bob, go ahead. Let's hear your thoughts on it as somebody who has a bit of a leg in the race.
My thoughts on it's what I predicted has happened. I said, semi happened. I said they would work it out. They didn't, but then WPA backed out of their statements. There was a big fuss created about it because the press release was interpreted incorrectly, in my opinion. And then there was a whole fake news thing, but it wasn't fake news. The news was real. It was just read differently than it was supposed to be read. Again, falling back to the issue of WPA having shit for brains when it comes to communication. They really need to hire a communication specialist. I keep saying that. I keep banging on that hammer, on that nail rather. Good for the industry, good for the players. And that's the most important at the end of the day. They will not be banning players when they play matchroom events, and whatever they may be, they can argue and discuss and negotiate until kingdom come, if for my part. Players are saved, they have no bans, and there it goes. And if they find an agreement, they find an agreement. If they don't, they don't. It's just a shame that the communications was not properly done, because there's still a lot of confusion among the players. By the fact that Matchroom denies that there is an agreement, which is a fact, and then WPA just saying, yeah, we're not banning you, and then sending out a press statement that is shoddy at best. So
unfortunate, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. Players are not banned, so yay.
Yeah, it was slightly misleading, the statement. You had to read it very, very carefully. I can imagine that people from other countries where English isn't their first language, when they first read that, they think, "Oh, agreement." Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing if the rule sets for the World 10 Ball and for all those events are written as
I was just going to say it was all written by the same person.
All written by the same person. No wonder there was confusions over the rules.
Exactly.
and he was drinking Magic Mind. Oh no, sorry.
Exactly.
Wow. Nobody hits on my sponsors.
Don't worry, Bob. I can bring you back. Oh, Nate's get his finger on the trigger.
That's like playing Pong.
Hey, so, it's hard enough to make a living in the pool world. Don't crap on the people that are helping us.
It's an extra plug, man. Bad advertising is better than no advertising. I think it was intentional. Maybe even the misleading communication. I don't know.
I think that you know, WPA had reached out to Matchroom and they were trying to talk again. And, you know, they had said, "We reached out to Barry Hearn," you know, so they went directly to the Ian's old buddy. And who knows whether that really had any kind of impact. And how Emily felt about them going over her head.
I was going to say, how serious are you if you're trying to skip over the person who has
decisions? But the main thing is, I think that they were rolling the dice that they were going to get something actually worked out with Matchroom before March 1st, which everybody in the world knew was not going to happen. For one, Matchroom does not rush through contracts. For two, they couldn't wait to make March 1st come and go and have the WPA have to say something. So, I mean, it was just so instead they hastily put together some release that says we're going to treat tournaments as sanctioned. It just mindless.
In order to protect the players.
Yeah. So it basically, you know, and Matchroom came right back with something and said, "Listen, it's really nice of them to do this. We have no deal in place. Our events are sanctioned by the WPNC, WQPNCC, and will continue to be, or and if they will look forward to the day where they could possibly be co-sanctioned with the WPA," which was the best line of the week. You know, it's basically, we're going on with business as usual. You guys let us know when you want to be serious about this, and we'll see if we can work something out. You know, a contract's gone back and forth from what I've heard. You know, whether anything eventually gets signed will all come down to whether WPA's willing to let Matchroom call all the shots going forward, which is what a Matchroom contract usually.
But at the end of the day, they did back out.
WPA.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Yes, like
to protect themselves, not to protect the players, to protect themselves.
I agree totally.
Well, protect their promoters that they're dealing with as much as anybody, right?
Okay, but let's be real. Part of this audience thought that was not going to happen. Are we agree as much?
I think that there were some people who thought the March 1st deadline was going to come and the ban was going to be in place, and we're going to have to see how everything lies. I don't think anybody really paid attention, listened closely for a long period of time, thought that it was going to, you know, really happen or last more than a day. So, I mean, we'll see what happens going forward. I mean, I don't expect at this point now, I don't expect Matchroom to be in any big rush to do anything. You know, they've got plenty of business on their plate to conduct. I think they'll get back to WPA when they can. And WPA will get back to Matchroom and say, "Well, this seems a little heavy-handed." And Matchroom will say, "Well, it's, you know, this is what we're looking at." And another couple months will go by, and we'll see.
Yeah, same for the WPA. I don't think they are in a rush anymore. They gambled, they lost, they overplayed their hand. They had to retract, and now they also bought themselves time to see, okay, what's the best way to move forward.
Well, I think the WPA really believes that it still holds some kind of leverage in a few areas, the World Championship being probably the biggest piece of the puzzle, that both sides have differing views on who holds the leverage with it. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how that proceeds.
The WPA have to be careful with that. I mean, there's obviously a contract just now between the WPA and Matrim for the World Championships. But when that contract expires, there's nothing to stop the Matrim turning around saying, there you go, you can have your World Championship back. We're going to have our own.
Yeah, right. No, you're right.
Yeah. Guys, it has been fun. Got to go.
Bob, take care. Good seeing you.
Yeah. See you next time, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I think I'm going to dance as well, to be honest. We'll be on here for an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, well, I don't have anything else I want to discuss.
All right, then.
Mike, you got anything?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Good seeing you guys.
Anything you want to promote, Mike? Any projects you got coming up?
No, but I'm willing to start a GoFundMe if anybody's interested.
for your trip to the gin factory.
No, my trip to Saudi Arabia, where there is no gin.
Are you going to go to the World Championships, are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm not, you know, and I was really worried about it being a dry country till I realized I'm going there directly from a week in Ireland. So I'm probably going to need a week to dry out anyway, so the desert will actually come in kind of handy. It'll be like going to a fat farm, you know what I
mean? You'll be going to detox in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it's like the Betty Ford Clinic, Saudi Arabian style.
The Betty Ford Desert.
Yeah, so. Cool. All good.
Oh, that's nice. I won't be going.
No? Okay. Yeah, it should be fun. Should be interesting. I've never been to the Middle East. It's a big, it's a kind of a cool event for one off first time type of thing. So $1 million, that'll be interesting. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how the players handle, you know, that jump in pressure. It's gonna be really interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's a big, you know, you start going from $60,000 first prizes to 200 and above.
Well, this is gonna be the first time for 95% of these players, this is going to be the first time they're going to be playing for life-changing money.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you finish 60,000 gets you through the year.
Right.
Kind of thing. But 200 plus.
100,
plus all the extras that will come with it. That's, you know.
Yeah. So you'll start to see, there'll be a little shaking some elbows come semifinals and finals at that event, guaranteed, which will be fun. Which will be fun.
What we want to see. That's what sport's all about.
Yep.
All right, well, let's close it out there then.
All right, guys. It's been fun. Thanks a lot.
We'll give shout outs. Thank you to Jacoby Custom Cues, always being the number one sponsor of the podcast. We appreciate you. Insight Performance Coaching, Salado, Digital Pool, Onboard Sportswear, Horo Tips, Lipman Lights, and Billiards Digest. Yay, Mike.
God bless us, everyone.
Yep. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.